Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England. What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back to another episode.
Thank you for joining us. As always, we are so happy to have you, especially on our 110th episode. We are just so thrilled to be this far into our podcast.
That's crazy to me.
Blows my mind every time we go up a number. It's crazy.
That's so crazy. And I wonder, too, if listening back or if you guys might notice a very subtle change in the audio because we are now recording at my new apartment.
Yes, that is right. So if you might notice that the ambiance is different, perhaps, or that maybe there's an echo, I don't know. But we're in a new place and it's beautiful.
Thanks. It definitely is echoey just because the ceilings are a lot higher and it's a lot bigger.
So much bigger, and it's a little bit more open.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
Thanks.
Are you liking it?
I love it. Salem loves it.
Yes.
I don't think she's ever seen stairs before. That's what I was thinking because technically it's a townhouse where my living room and my kitchen are on the first floor and everything else is upstairs. So the first night, she was looking at the stairs like, what the fuck is this?
And I had to, what do I do?
I was going to carry her up them, but then I was like, I'll be setting a precedence and I will like, she's going to want to be held and carried every single time.
Yeah.
But she got the hang of it because at 4 o'clock in the morning when she has her zoomies, she runs up and down the stairs.
Of course she does.
So
that must be loud and annoying. Perfect.
Love it.
Well, I'm glad you're really enjoying it, and I'm glad Salem is enjoying it, because that is equally as important.
Oh, yeah.
I did bring her a housewarming gift today. I brought your birthday presents, but I also brought her a nice toy to enjoy that she has not. She sniffed it. She didn't seem to really pay it much attention, but that's okay.
3 o'clock this morning, I'm telling you, she'll...
You'll hear it.
Oh, yeah.
It has little bells on it. I'm sorry, I should have thought of that. That's all right. But on another good note... Besides the wonders of new beginnings at a new apartment and new cat toys and things, the good news just keeps rolling in, and not just in terms of your podcast hosts, but the true crime world.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, you guys might recall that in one of our intros, we talked about how the Lady of the Dunes was halfway solved in that they identified her.
Yes.
And the article said, okay, her name is Ruth Marie Terry. She was from, I believe, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And all the articles were saying, okay, so really the only person that could have been responsible for this was her husband, mm-hmm. Guy Modolvin. We don't know if it's him for sure, but he does have a track record. He's suspected in the murders of his, or disappearances or something.
Right.
Of his first wife and children.
Yeah.
He's very suspicious. Mm-hmm. He was acting really weird and he died in 2002.
That's it. That's all we knew.
They have definitively solved her murder, and it is, to no one's surprise, her husband.
It's always the husband.
It's always the husband. I mean, hello. And in the cases where it's not the husband, I'm sorry, because you're going to be the first person that people look at, of course.
Understandably.
But yeah, this asshat guy almost got away with it. And yeah. Guess what, bitch? Even though you're dead, even though you can't be prosecuted,
yeah.
We all hate you.
Yeah.
And you didn't get away with it.
Yeah, we know. So I'm really glad that finally, after so long, 60 years, I mean, almost, if that, I mean, she finally has her name back. It's just, thank God.
So cool. So cool to see the whole thing solved in our lifetime.
Absolutely. And in such quick succession, too, as it should be. It will never fail to blow my mind how amazing technology is. And if you think of it, too, like, we covered her case just about a year ago. It was the beginning of September that her episode for Us came out. They announced her identity last October, like the very end of October.
Yeah.
And then now, just recently, they announced that they did, in fact, confirm it was her husband. So within a year, they solved it. And that's amazing. And I'm glad.
So cool.
And just to keep it rolling with the good news and the niceness.
Sure. We have some buy us of coffees.
Yay.
Tabitha P. bought us 6 coffees.
Thank you, Tabitha.
Thanks, Tabitha. And one of our, I think, George S., you are quickly becoming one of our podcast besties.
I love you, George.
George S., you guys, sends us the nicest emails with fantastic suggestions. We just had a case of his a little bit ago, actually. Not to spoil anything, but we have another case of George's coming up down the line.
Yeah.
That we're so excited to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And George S. bought us 4 coffees.
Yeah. So nice.
George.
And when he sends us emails, he has the most genuinely unique compliments as well. That are just so sweet.
I think they're some of my favorites. Like one of my favorite ones, George, that you have said to us is that we are A1.
Yes, that was very nice.
Thank you, George.
Yes, thank you, George.
Oh. And this case also came highly recommended, the case that we have for you guys today.
Yeah.
Someone wrote us a review on Apple Podcasts, and the review, in the body of the review, it told us to cover this case.
Yeah. That was like all it was, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very intriguing. Thank you. Lauren B. suggested this case to us via website submission tool, as well as Lindsay V. via email.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
This is definitely an interesting one, for sure.
Yeah, I will say major content warning for this case, because as you can tell by the title, we are talking about the attacks of 2 girls, and the 2 girls are very young. They're only 12.
Yeah.
And the things that they endured are really hard to talk about. I'm sure they're going to be really hard to listen to.
Yeah.
Just imagining them happening to anyone is really disturbing. But I think just because they're 2 young girls and they were best friends too, to have to go through it together, it's just really hard to talk about, really hard to read, and I'm sure very hard to listen to. So just as an FYI, if that's not something you want to sit through, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And without further ado, today, we will be covering the attacks of Melissa Walbridge and Megan O'Rourke. All right, Katie, per usual, let me know what you've got for sources today, because I've got a ton.
I have quite a few as well. I have information from vnews.com, upi.com, washingtonpost.com, Times Argus, Web Sleuths, Find a Grave, and Law Justia. Finishing strong.
Absolutely. I use Web Sleuths as well. I had 2 articles from New York Times. I used VNews. I had 3 articles from UPI News. I used Law Justia. And interestingly enough, if any of you are frequent listeners and know me, and Katie, obviously, I used an article from Christian Science Monitor. But it was interesting because it had information about youth crime.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, interesting. Perfect. Yeah, very fascinating.
Very unexpected.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So we see kind of how it plays in here. Right. All right. Katie, what do you think? Should we, let's start it off. And I would love it if you could just kind of, per usual, just set the scene. What's going on?
Sure. On the afternoon of May 15th, 1981, 2 12-year-old best friends, Melissa Walbridge and Megan O'Rourke, were walking home from the Albert D. Law and Middle School in Essex Junction, Vermont. They had left school kind of late that day. Even though it was rainy, they were playing on the swing set for a few minutes because they're little 12-year-old girls.
I would still stop at a swing set.
Absolutely.
Something about a swing set's very relaxing. You're a little late already. Nobody's around. Whatever.
What's the rush? You're 12 years old. You don't really have any responsibilities.
It's 1981. Their parents, they're probably latchkey kids, would be my guess. Their parents are probably both at work. They're just going home. Whatever.
The doors unlocked because it's always unlocked.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
The girls turned to walk on a narrow path through the woods. And now when I was reading this, I was thinking, a narrow path through the woods.
No, thank you.
Little sketchy.
And also, if it was raining, or at least it had been raining, to me, that's checking all the boxes of like, no, thank you, no, thank you. But if you think of it, again, it's 1981. Back then, if you lived within 50 miles of the school, you didn't get a bus or whatever, you know? So it was so common to just walk home from school. And if that meant a shortcut was through the woods, you absolutely did that.
For sure. And it was a common shortcut.
Like, yeah.
Other kids would use it all the time to get to school, to get from school. I mean, it was right near a park too. So multiple people would use it, like grown adults, just whoever. People going for walks would use that as a walking trail. Pretty casual.
Yeah. It's just a path.
Two teenage boys, 16-year-old Louis Hamlin and 15-year-old Jamie Savage, had been in the woods hunting squirrels with pellet guns when they caught sight of the two girls. Mm-hmm. The boys hid in the woods and waited as they kept watching the girls on their walk. When the girls passed right by their hiding spot, the boys jumped out and grabbed them from behind, putting their cupped hands over their mouths to keep them quiet and then dragging them off the path and into the woods.
It's definitely something you... Like, what I pictured in my mind was almost like in a cheesy sci-fi channel horror movie, you know? Like, they totally ambush them. And these girls are shocked. You know, they're with their bestie. And I can imagine the fear that they're feeling. And then suddenly to be ambushed and dragged away by these two teenage boys who are definitely scary because they're bigger, they're older. That's terrifying.
Yeah. And then they start threatening them with the BB guns.
Right.
And so I don't know if the girls had ever seen a BB gun or a real gun. They could easily have been convinced or have thought in their minds that that's a real gun. But regardless, a BB gun hurts.
Absolutely, it does. Have you ever been shot by a BB gun?
Yes.
Me too. Ouchies. I had a mean brother. They hurt. Especially close range, too.
Oh, or right in the face or something.
Oh, like, my. Oh. Those fuckers leave dents in your belly. Like, I remember distinctly being shot in the belly. And even though that was my softest little area, ouch. So being threatened and then also, of course, being dragged off. Yeah, no, that's not okay.
The boys were threatening them to keep quiet and not make any noise. And then they told the girls to take their clothes off.
Yikes. So now it's getting real.
It's escalating quickly. So barely off the path.
Yeah.
And now these two random guys are threatening them with guns.
Yeah.
And now they're asking them to take their clothes off. They're 12 years old. Like, yeah. Oh my God. Imagine what was going through their mind.
Yeah. And they probably, like, 12 years old, they were probably just kind of understanding, like, they probably, you know, probably had crushes and stuff, maybe even kissed a few boys or whatever, but they probably didn't really know much about, like, sex or, like, understanding, like, what it meant super much to touch each other and things like that. So to be, not really even asked, but, like, demand, like, take your clothes off. What? That's terrifying. These two strangers with guns just ambushed us in the woods. I can't even imagine what was going through their brains. How terrifying.
Megan started to do what the boys asked out of sheer terror, but Melissa put up a bit of a fight, which really pissed off Louie, and Louie was the one that had grabbed her off the trail and was the one that was directly threatening her.
Yeah.
Louie, out of anger, began to vaginally and anally rape Megan, even though Megan was the one who was not resisting, doing what they asked her to, yeah. And really wasn't saying anything, just kind of doing what they asked.
Yeah.
Louis then began strangling Melissa. And when Jamie looked over and saw this, he began strangling Megan. And Megan was like, what is going, leave my friend alone, yeah. Leave me alone. What is going on?
Yeah.
It's getting very violent very quickly.
It's escalating so fast. And you wonder, like, what was building up in these boys for so long? And they're so young, too. These kids, 15, 16. Why were they being so violent? What were they trying to achieve at such a young age?
Louis then stated, quote, now you're going to know what it feels like to be shot 5 times, to be killed, to be slaughtered like a pig. He then shoved Megan onto the ground, kicking her in the back with his boot. Megan said that she looked up to see Jamie choking Melissa. He looked over to see Megan looking up at him, and he told her to look away or he would shoot her. She then felt something hit her back that she described as being like a dart.
Ugh. That's terrible.
The girls were then dragged to another part of the woods where they were gagged and bound. Louis shot Megan in the side of the neck with a BB gun. So now she's shot at least twice.
Yeah. So once Megan was shot in the neck, she suddenly hears Louis go, "Where's the knife?" And she's, as if it wasn't enough that they were shot at, sexually assaulted, ambushed in itself. "Where's the knife?" She was then pushed to the ground. She's already looking away from her friend, being told she's going to be killed. And then suddenly, you know, she has that dart in her back, which I was reading that and thinking of it. I'm like, Jesus Christ, thinking of just a darts you play at the bar or whatever, and thinking of that in my back. Oh, God. You read these things and you start to imagine, and it makes you just get this visceral reaction. And you just feel, she's 12 years old. They're 12. And they're in the woods, you have to remember, naked. Suddenly, Megan felt something sharp be pulled across her throat. And it was at this point that Megan had lost consciousness. It's unclear how much time had passed, but eventually Megan woke up. She didn't know where Melissa was, but she found herself covered in blood, naked still, of course, and underneath a soggy, foam, moldy mattress. Miraculously, despite several wounds, she was bound and gagged still. She was able to pull herself out from underneath this mattress, naked and bloody, and she was able to stumble out of the woods. I can't even believe she was able to do that. I don't know how far she traveled. I don't think super far, which is good. Somehow, she was able to walk out of the path, and she ran into a man who worked for the Central Vermont Railway, who immediately rushed her to the Medical Center Hospital of Vermont, where she was able to get treatment, thank God, which saved her life because she had severe wounds. She had been shot at with a BB gun, close range, several times, which will do some good damage, you know, some flesh wounds. And she had been cut on her throat and in her back. That's shit. You know, once the police heard that Megan was in the hospital and what had happened, you know, they had gone to her, they talked to her, and then they also had sent a team out to where Megan was and the area she described, and they found that same mattress that she had described she had come out from underneath. And underneath that mattress, they discovered Melissa, who was also still bound and gagged. However, Melissa was dead.
Megan said later that the last thing Melissa, who she called Missy, said to her was that she was sorry because Melissa had convinced her to take the path home. Normally, they would take the path together or take it alone. It was, you know, like we said, a very popular shortcut.
Right.
But Megan was resistant that day because she had taken the shortcut 2 days prior by herself. And she said that she had a really scary encounter with two men. And she said these two men kind of jumped out almost, or were they suddenly appeared on this path or this trail. And she said, quote, "They sort of seemed scary." And they just materialized on this fucking path in front of her. And she's a 12-year-old girl by herself, so she turned and ran the other way. She said to the police that as she was being attacked and she was able to see their faces, like she was looking over to Melissa and watching both of the boys attack Melissa, attack her. She had the disturbing realization that the two men she saw on the trail 2 days prior were the same ones that were attacking her and her best friend.
Yeah. How terrifying. Oh, man. An autopsy was done that revealed Melissa had been choked, just like Megan recalled. Melissa's body also showed blunt impact injuries, multiple BB-like gunshot wounds, roughly 5 stab wounds, and several shallow incisions that were referred to as, quote, teasing wounds, which to me almost, I interpreted that as more like they were hesitant, maybe they were like the first few attempts at stabbing her before they gained, I hate to say it, like their confidence in what they were doing.
Ooh.
Right? I don't know. That's what how I perceived it.
I took it the other way. I took it that they were doing it on purpose, like cutting her shallowly almost, like, look what we're doing.
Right?
You can do this so much worse, or just kind of torturing her.
That's terrible. That's so much worse.
Just because I was thinking, and I think in one of the articles I saw, it was that Megan was describing this torture.
Right.
That they went through. So I was thinking they were doing it intentionally. That just makes, to kind of really instill fear into them.
That makes so much more sense and is also way worse.
That's way worse.
My brain was probably trying to make it, no, like, less bad.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
That's way worse.
Oh, I hate that. Melissa's cause of death was ultimately determined to be due to a stab wound to the left of her chest, which had punctured her heart. Thankfully for Megan, she was able to get to the hospital, get treatment, and she did survive. Man, I just, you know, she had to go to the hospital, learn that her best friend had been killed in this attack, this brutal attack that she had survived and witnessed. And then, of course, all of this is happening and she has to talk to the police and recall and think about it over and over and over again. It's the trauma of that will never, ever, ever leave her.
Yeah.
Ever.
And even just the police, too, responding to this, they said later on that they were fully expecting Megan to tell them two adult men.
Mm-hmm.
Because just the thought of two young boys, I mean, 15 and 16, doing this to little girls. It turns out that the boys had been in the woods not just to hunt squirrels, but to intentionally wait by the walking path to, quote, get a couple of girls.
Ugh. So these kids, I mean, 15 and 16, and they had the most nefarious ideas already in their heads. I don't understand why people already have these thoughts and these desires to do these things. How do they think they can just get away with this stuff?
Right.
They just think it's all going to be okay? Like, what's...
Yeah, and I wonder, honestly, too, the shock that they felt. Like, what do you mean that Megan survived?
Right.
Because that's attempted murder. They literally intended to murder her and leave her for dead underneath the mattress. If she had passed away, who knows? Who knows if they would have ever been found?
Right.
If they would have been found in a timely manner, if there would have been enough evidence left behind to pin it to the two boys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if the two boys would have ever even been connected to the murders to begin with.
Right. And, you know, honestly, like, how many times, like, do you go on a walk through the woods or whatever and you find, like, an abandoned tarp or an abandoned mattress or just some, like, junk? You're not going over there and, like, I wonder what's underneath this. It's just a piece of garbage. You just leave it there. You're not touching the, ew, it's gross. The mold, the bleh. There's probably, like, it's probably a squirrel den. I don't know. You know, animals probably live in it. You're not checking underneath for bodies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And your mind might wander there, like, mm-hmm. Oh, wouldn't that be crazy if there's a body under there? Sometimes when I am driving on the side of the highway and there's a trash bag.
Every time.
And my, even an animal, like, yeah. The stories of how people cut open a trash bag just because and there's a litter of puppies or something.
I think about that literally, even just today driving here, I saw a trash bag and I was like, you know, that trash bag it's shaped kind of funny. I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. On May 20th, 1981, police showed Megan several pictures of different young men that they thought could potentially be the perpetrators. And it was here that she picked out 15-year-old Jamie Savage and, of course, 16-year-old Louis Hamlin III. And on May 21st, 1981, early in the morning, those two teenage boys were arrested. Louis Hamlin was charged with first-degree murder and aggravated sexual assault. Jamie Savage, because he was only 15, could not be charged in the criminal court, and as a result, juvenile delinquency proceedings were had instead. And we will expand. We're about to get into all that right now.
For sure.
For surezies.
In court, Megan described a horrific ordeal of how both her and Melissa were repeatedly raped, tortured with the knife, shot with the gun, and then left for dead. Four witnesses came forward in court to testify that Louis had discussed the attacks with them and admitted to it.
Mm.
Two of the witnesses said that just a week after, the two boys who they were kind of acquaintances with, I guess, were telling them about the attacks in a way that, you know, they were all just kind of talking. Like, wow, I can't believe that something like this would happen so close to home.
Yeah.
I can't believe that the two girls, 12 years old, that's so crazy. They're a member of our community. That's so young. And then the two boys were acting really off. And Louis told them, actually, we did that.
Oh. Wow. I'm so happy for you. Like, what?
Yeah. Do you want a cookie?
Yeah. Seriously.
The two witnesses said that when he said this, Jamie then kind of was nudging Louis or just kind of like, man, shut up. Be quiet.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth. What are you? Don't say that shit. And Louis's like, what are you talking about, man? We did do it. We did that. Like, bragged.
So proud.
So proud. He wanted credit. He wanted to be held responsible, not in a court of law, but he wanted to be seen as the one responsible for doing that.
Right. While awaiting trial, about 3 months after the murder, Louis was being held in the maximum security wing at the St. Albans Correctional Center. So during the actual trial, a guard who worked on that wing during the time that Louis was there, he testified that he overheard Louis talking to another inmate. And when he testified, he said that what he heard was that Louis said, I killed the girl. I figure I owe 10 years. I'm going to tell the judge I owe 10 years and that's all I'm going to serve. What a cocky bitch.
Did we not just cover a case where it was Anthony Lord? We just covered Anthony Lord where he was like, I'm going to tell the judge that I am only going to serve 40 years and that that's reasonable.
Right.
Because I deserve to see the light of day.
Yeah. And I surrendered peacefully. And it's like, what? You don't get to decide that, honey. You killed someone. Like, you're not God.
Right. What gives you the audacity and what gives you the privilege to say, I'm going to tell the judge that I'm going to only serve 10 years?
Right. Right. Yeah. Additionally, an inmate who was also waiting for his own trial on that same wing at the St. Albans Correctional Center testified during Louis' trial that he had also overheard Louis say to a different inmate that he had, quote, killed a girl, stabbed her in the chest twice, and in the back once. And then that same inmate also testified that he heard Louis say as well that he would kill Jamie if he ever ratted them out. Okay, so I'm starting to think, in my own personal opinion here, that maybe Louis was the ringleader.
Fully with you.
Because clearly he has this really negative, like, he's evil. He's super evil. And I'm not saying Jamie isn't, because he is. He's definitely also very evil, premeditated. They both wanted the same thing. But clearly, this fucker is, like, proud of it.
Absolutely. Even during the attacks, Louis was strangling Melissa, and then Jamie looked over, saw Louis strangle Melissa, and then got the bright idea to start strangling Megan. Like, right. He clearly is looking to Louis for guidance. He's looking up to Louis. Louis's clearly the one in control.
Right.
He's older. Just that alone is a little bit of a power struggle. Like, oh, he's 16 and I'm only 15 and he's the older boy. And even just, it's the whole crime itself.
Yeah.
Louis was the ringleader.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the goal of Louis' defense team, of course, as it is with any crime duo, is to pin it on the other. So his defense team was like, okay, yes, Louis was there. We will not deny that. But Jamie was the ringleader. Jamie killed Melissa. Jamie attacked Megan. Louis was just present. Is he wrong for not stopping his friend? Yes. But should he be tried? Should he be prosecuted? No. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you idiots. And I hate that because obviously Jamie is guilty as well, of course. But even if he was the ringleader, this guy also should be. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I think it's just so nuts.
I always find it so funny, and not like a funny ha-ha way, but a funny, like, fuck you way. With what the defense will try to pull.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, were you there? Were you up in a tree watching the whole thing unfold? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, stop pulling shit out of your ass to make this bum-ass kid look a little better in the eyes of the law and just kiss your loss and he's going away.
Right.
For the rest of his life.
Right.
Both boys were tried and convicted, but the public quickly grew angry when news broke that Jamie would serve no more than 3 years because at the age of 15, the law required that he be tried in juvenile court. Therefore, he would get out and be a free man, literally, because he was going to get out on his 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
The public was livid.
Absolutely. And can you blame them?
No.
Absolutely not. All because simply, I don't know when Jamie's birthday was. I think it was in September. So May to September, what is that, 180 days? I don't know. 180-day difference stopping him from being prosecuted correctly for a crime of killing a 12-year-old girl.
Right.
That's, to me, that's fucking ridiculous. To most people, I think that's fucking ridiculous.
I always think it's so interesting, you know, the cutoff.
Yeah.
The cutoff for what you're considered in the eyes of the law as an adult. Mm-hmm. Because I think killing someone, especially killing a girl, you're very close to your age.
Absolutely.
Killing anybody, that's a pretty adult thing to do.
Right.
And it required planning.
Absolutely.
It wasn't even that they were in the woods and they just stumbled upon these girls and they're like, oh, let's take this opportunity. They were in the woods to find two girls that were on the walking trail. Mm-hmm. That was their entire goal. So not only was it premeditated, mm-hmm. they came armed. They had Absolutely. The knife. They had the BB guns, which, mm-hmm. okay, you could play games and argue there that they're not real guns, but you use them to inflict torture and pain on two minors. Hello.
Absolutely. And they were there 2 days before. So you know that at least it was premeditated for 2 days, at the very least.
That's right.
And you can count premeditation as a minute before, Absolutely. You know? So that's guilty as fuck in the eyes of the law. But because he was 15 in 342 days or whatever, that's enough in Vermont at the time to be a juvenile and not be charged as an adult.
In one of the rare cases where protesting and probably petitioning public outcry worked to make change, over the summer of 1981, a very special session of the Vermont legislature was convened where lawmakers completely changed the law for the age you can be considered an adult.
Mm-hmm.
They passed a statute that would allow for a juvenile as young as the age of 10
yeah.
to be tried as an adult depending on the crime that was committed.
Yeah.
The crimes included murder, kidnapping, unlawful restraint, and sexual assault.
Which is honestly, like, that was a great move. Absolutely correct. And also terrifying to think of a 10-year-old doing that.
Right?
Like, good move, correct, but what 10-year-old?
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting that sexual assault, too, was part of that, because sexual assault, I mean, to this day, really is not taken as seriously as it should be. So right. for that to be considered punishable as an adult, that's pretty cool. Like, go Vermont.
Yeah, for sure.
Governor Richard Snelling stated, quote, "This has not been a session of retribution or hatred. And while the measure you have passed is strong and firm, it cannot be said to be harsh. Mm-hmm. You have not acted in the belief that there are simple answers to hard questions."
Right.
After the attacks, the state was prompted to open a 30-bed facility in Essex that later served as a Vermont youth prison. Bold move.
Yeah. Very.
Jamie Savage spent 3 years in an out-of-state facility for juveniles before Vermont was required to release him. It is suspected that he moved to another state and that he changed his name.
But it's nobody knows. Nobody knows where he is.
We'll find you, Jamie.
We'll find you.
Keep your eyes out. Bob.
Bob Barker? Wait.
Sleep with one eye open. Louis Hamlin is serving his 45-to-life sentence in a federal prison and recently was moved to a different prison, I believe in Wisconsin.
Yeah, somewhere out. West, somewhere weird.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes they do that just for overflow, or, you know, they have a bed available here and there's overcrowding here.
Yeah.
So they just kind of bump people. Sometimes they do it because of conflict, like if one guy in a cell is fighting with another and it just, like, you're causing problems.
Yeah.
Go ahead, leave. We're not quite sure, but he has bounced around. I think this is his third different prison that he's been in, just for the sake of sharing information.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's been 40 years since this happened. And like you said, Katie, they had a real quick turnaround where they were like, okay, this is kind of ridiculous. 15 is, that's way too old to be still saying juvenile, change it to 10. And that's great. Despite that new law being passed so quickly, it was discovered that in the first half of 1982, so like, you know, a year after the attacks, 30% of serious crime in the state of Vermont was committed by juveniles, interestingly enough. And I was wondering personally, was this because they thought they could get away with so much more? Like, juveniles heard this and were like, oh, well, I mean, if you're not really getting tried for very much because I'm 12 or 13 or 14, whatever, then I've always wanted to know what it was like to rob a store or whatever, you know? That's me speculating, but like, crime was really ramping up, right? I know. Burlington police claimed that the violent juvenile crime rate in 1982 had gone up to 400% over 1981. And this was potentially due to the fact that police now, since that murder had happened, were paying more attention to juveniles in the crimes that they were committing. So not that all of a sudden 400% more crime was happening, but that suddenly they were like, instead of being like, oh, kids being kids, they were now like, okay, these kids have been doing this the whole time.
Right.
And now we're like, okay, we should probably stop them from doing that, you know? Like, and then now the officers were like putting more time in.
Right.
Yeah. But that was in 1982. It's been 40 years. So laws have continued to change and less juveniles, I would say, slip through the cracks these days. So who knows? I don't know what the current laws are. I think changing that law to over the age of 10 that was a great move. Definitely appropriate for sure. And it was very impressive they did it so quickly.
Yeah. And I think all the public outcry too, just the fact that, you know, I feel like now there's a lot of public outcry for a lot of different things and they're just kind of like, na, 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 like they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But back then they were like, oh, you guys are really upset about this. What can we do to address this situation and make sure it's fair?
Yeah.
It's also like a very Vermont thing to do, I feel like.
Vermont's just so like,
they're on it.
They're on it.
They're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
You can learn more about this case by reading the book that was written about it, titled Death of Innocence by Peter Meyer.
Awesome. And that is the terrible case of the attacks of Megan O'Rourke and Melissa Walbridge, which ultimately ended in her death. We would always, of course, as you guys know, want to know what you think about this case. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TrueCrimeNE.
All lowercase.
Or you can send us an email at TrueCrimeNE@gmail.com.
We also, of course, have a website, TrueCrimeNE.com. You could go to our contact page and use our handy-dandy submission tool where you can send us questions, comments, concerns, thoughts about this case, other cases we have covered. You can go back and listen to a couple other cases that we've done on attacks, dual murders, dual, you know, pairs, all that other good stuff. And you can also use the handy-dandy submission tool to send us cases based in New England, please, that you would like to hear us cover, such as Lauren B., who used the website submission tool to suggest the case to us today, as well as other people, but Lauren B. used the website submission tool, so, you know.
Thanks, girl.
You could scroll down ever so slightly further to our Buy Us a Coffee button. You can click the button that says thank you and go to our Buy Us a Coffee page, where you can buy myself a coffee and Liz a non-coffee-related beverageino. But like we always say and cannot stress enough, you do not have to spend money. You don't have to spend a dollar. You don't have to spend a cent. You guys just being here and listening and supporting us that way is more than we could ever ask for. And we're just so thankful.
And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.